And I say all of that to say, like, these homies that I met in PA, in Penn State, in Pennsylvania, are the most down-home people I ever met. They remind me the most of my immigrant family members, people who grew up in Haiti, which is famously called the poorest place in the Western Hemisphere. They remind me the most of those people than literally anybody I've ever met before. You know, and it was just a revelation of just like meeting poor white people was like the concept of poor white people doesn't even enter your psyche in a place like New York, right? Because right. In LA, like the homelessness is such that there's a lot of poor homeless people and there's a lot of homeless white people. And so you get a sense that there are, but the only poor people in LA are homeless. Right?
Right. There's no floor in LA. I mean, of course there's poor neighborhoods, but I know what you mean. It's like LA is terrifying in that sense. Like, it's like, it's either hey, you want to go to the yoga garden?
Right.
Or, oh, look, there's a homeless or city just, there under the underpass.
A homeless city.
Yep.
Straight up.
Yep.
You know, and so it's very illuminating in, and by the way, that county, I looked it up, that those homies grew up at is Trump country.
Right.
Right. But I'm just telling you, whatever we think about people who love our president, people who we might call deplorable or whatever, that's where those homies come from. And they are anything but the stereotypes we might place on them. And, you know, maybe I'm a pussy for being hopeful from that, but that's just the reality, bro. Like, I lived with these people. I lived with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I was calling my mom to send me $50, they were doing the same shit. Like, their experience, their lives mirrored mine in so many ways. And, you know, I just think if the struggle is going to be made wholesale, that's the type of people we gotta change their minds, Mike. Hey,
wanna dedicate this joint right here, Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson. Peace to those brothers. Wanna shout out my man Sharon the Worm, 80 years. Come home, nigga. Burnt my American flag and sent 3 cracker Nazis to hell, and I'm sad. I'm loading tips in my mag.
Hello and welcome to the Burn It Down podcast. I'm your host Jay Hezekiah, along with my co-host Olivia Seaman. Say hello, Liv.
Hello.
Today we have, I mean, one of the biggest guests we've ever had on the show. This is a guy I've been following his career for the past, I want to say, like 6 years. But he's come a long way from being, you know, just a talking head on a small sports podcast. Everybody say hello to my man, Big Wise.
Yo, what's going on, Jay? Olivia, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here. And thank you for the kind words, man. Obviously, I appreciate people who fuck with what we do, but obviously it's more special people who, you know, have watched my, I guess, ascent. I don't know how else you would put that, but my journey through this industry. So I appreciate that. And I know that you know, the type of shit that I've been on from way back. So so it's dope to be on here on your podcast. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's dope. I love that people who fuck with what we were doing on the podcast tip would go out and do their own shit. That's awesome to me.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate that. So, Waz, tell people a little bit about yourself, your full name, where you're from, what you do for a living, that type
of
stuff.
Yeah, if the IRS is listening, my full name is Wozni Lambre. I'm a Haitian American, first generation. Born and raised in Brooklyn and Queens. I was born in Brooklyn, lived there until I was 12. Moved to Queens after my mother bought a house And I lived in Queens until the age of 30. Shit. Yeah, 30. Until the age of 30, because I moved to LA in 2007. I mean, excuse me, 2017. And I've been in LA since 2017. So, yeah, man. And now, I'm a writer for The Athletic. I do my concentration or beat, if you will, is the NBA and culture, where the NBA intersects with the culture at large is probably my specialty. And we also do a podcast over there, on The Athletic's podcast network called The Athletic NBA Show, where I do a show that comes out on Mondays called The Basket Buds with a bunch of our writers from The Athletic. And then our Wednesday show is a show called Hoops Adjacent, where I do a show with David Aldridge, who is a legendary NBA media guy, both broadcast and print, who's actually
Hall of Fame.
Right.
Yes. Like,
I'm not just calling him a legend. Like, he's literally in the Hall of Fame, and he'll be there forever. Right. When we're long and gone, David Aldridge will be in the NBA, in the Basketball Hall of Fame, for his contributions to the game. And I'm blessed enough to do a podcast with him, called Hoops with Jason. Yeah, every Wednesday. Go. So, you know, if you guys don't listen to that, go check that out. I think if you have even a passing interest in the NBA, you'll enjoy what we do, because we try to keep it light, fun, informative, and try to be interesting. That was long.
Nah, I appreciate it. Yeah, and, you know, I do want to mention the Count the Dings Network, too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Count the Dings is, you know, because that's not my job. That's, you know, that's the company that we started, right?
Right.
You know, for people to know, we started Count the Dings as a sort of independent media company that would concentrate on the NBA as well as pop culture in 2019. In March of 2019, The Athletic acquired the sports portion of Count the Dings, and they hired me full time, hired my man Black Trey. Zach Harper was already over there. And they hired Jade Hoy to head up their NBA audio product. And we still, to this day, under the Count the Dings flag, we do a wide assortment of pop culture offerings, from Black Opinions Matter Network or the Black Opinions Matter feed, which, you know, has a pop culture show with myself, Black Trey, Amin El Hassan, John Gervais. We do a show called The Woke Bros, which is ironically named, I know a lot of people don't understand that, but it's ironically named The Woke Bros, that I founded with my partner, Michael Brooks, who is now passed on. Rest in peace, Michael Brooks. But now I do with my other partner and brother, Nando Vila, where we do, you know, politics with a leftward slant, if you will. We do that. We also offer Wednesday Service with Naima Cochran and Curran. They do pop culture and an assortment of other sort of topics from a unique perspective, I would say. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're Black American, whereas like me and Nando are like distinctly immigrant, first gen people. They're Black American people whose family have roots that go back hundreds of years in this country. And I think, you know, as educated Black Americans, they have a different worldview than I do, than I could ever offer. So that's what they do on Wednesday Service. I love what they do. I just love their perspective because it's so different than ours. It's almost like if you're watching MSNBC, you know, the difference between a Lawrence O'Donnell and a Chris Hayes.
Right? Yeah, right.
It's the same channel, but it's different perspectives. Or even Rachel Maddow, right? Who's different from Joyanne Reed, right? And so I think that's what we're trying to do. And then, of course, we do Growing Up the Same, with Jason Madison and Black Trey. They interview interesting, famous fucking people on that show about just their hustle and their grind. And then we got all kinds of other shit, Cinephobe and, you know, Pack Your Knives, which is a Top Chef show, and the Friday Mailbag, which is for our core, like, day ones, if you will.
Yeah, I'm Jade. Still listening to this day.
I love it. With me, Jade, and Zach, and Eden, and we get into it about an assortment of stuff. My man, Tony Hayes. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of fucking me yapping and just, you know, but just trying to entertain people and trying to keep people informed about things that I think actually affect their lives, you know, particularly with what we do on Woke Bros and, you know, everything that we do. So it's just trying to, you know, keep things light. We want to entertain. I think it's important to entertain people, to make people feel good about the content that they're consuming, right? Even if you are delivering horrible news, I think it's still our jobs to make it entertaining, to make people want to engage with, you know, as old school niggas from my hood would say, brain food. We giving you food. You know what I'm saying? Whenever old school niggas think he's giving you some game, call it food, because it's not that candy, bubble gum, popcorn shit. It's real shit, you know. So I think it's important when you're in doing what we're doing, especially particularly in these times, man, where it seems like everybody is pretty politically engaged, that you be entertaining, that you be funny, that you make people laugh and make people feel good, because to me that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's pretty much the reason why we started this show. You know, like I told you before, we started this show around the George Floyd, you know, uprisings or what have you. And at first, when we first started out, I didn't want to be the host of this show. I was going to have somebody else do it. But after Bernie had dropped out, everybody was, you know, a little timid. So I said, well, why don't we, you know, let the people speak for themselves? Like, we'll just go out and get, you know, people to interview and, you know, give their feelings or whatever, get everybody politically engaged, and, you know, and I feel like this has been a working formula. But nowadays we do three different shows. We do the interview shows, we have a movie review show, and then we have Shooting the Shit with Liv and Jay, where me and Liv just, you know, riff and talk about politics ourselves. And we're not the smartest people in the world, but like, I feel like me and her, like, really funny.
You don't gotta be smart to understand politics.
Yeah, right. And that's like, that's why I tell a lot of people, like, I ask a lot of people to be on this show, and they're like, well, I don't think I'm smart enough. But I'm like, no, me and Liv aren't geniuses, so like, we don't expect.
I mean, anybody who's listening to this and is interested in politics, it's very simple. It comes down to who's in charge or who's in power and who's not, and what they do with said power. That's it. That's the beginning, the end, the middle. That's it. It's really not any more complicated than that. It's who's in charge of what, and what do they do when they're in charge. And once you understand that, you can, you know, you can divine your own sort of opinions out of that. But that's the game. That's the whole game.
Exactly.
Liv, you have any questions?
Wozni, if you don't mind, like, how did you come to, what made you like want to like get involved with podcasting? You know, like, what influenced you, you know, as a leftist? Like, what kind of inspired you? And like, what's your like personal, like, you know, journey?
Man, that's a crazy question. Not a crazy question, but it's a lot. It's like, I've always been a pretty observant person, in that if I'm interested in something, I'm going to try to figure it out. Right. Not to say to master it, but I'm going to try to figure it out, right? And so my passions really haven't changed outside of politics, particularly politics of the left. But my passions since I was 7 have been hooping and rap. Sneakers flows out of that. Getting fresh flows out of that same thing, which is clothing, fashion, style, whatever the fuck you want to call it, flows out of that same thing. But it's all intertwined, right? Like, we love getting fresh, and we were all hoopers. And the sneakers that we wanted to wear were basketball sneakers, right? And that's the same sneakers that we hooped in, right? And so that's how a whole, like, when people say holistic or intersectional, that's what that is. Like, sneakers intersect sports and fashion and style, right? For us, anyway, as young people growing up in Brooklyn. And, you know, I loved playing hoops, and I was just obsessed with rap. I remember, you know, probably 1995, the height of Big and Bad Boy and those things. I remember I was 8, and I remember it hit me like that. This is what I was into. I was into this music. I was into this culture, this way of talking, this way of dressing, this way of expressing yourself, this way of being, this culture, these mores called hip hop. Like, at 8, I just knew that's what I was about. And growing up in Flatbush, Brooklyn, I'm talking about at the height of, you know, Big Papa and the One More Chance remix video, and all of these things, and just Bad Boy was just omnipresent, and I was, you know, that shit changed me, right? And so I always identified myself as a hip-hop person to this day. Like, I feel like a lot of people, I don't know that Lil Baby or Young Thug, although they are hip-hop obviously, I don't know that they self-identify in that way the way we used to in the 90s, right? It was like a thing. It was like, it was almost like a religion that you identified with. Like, I'm hip-hop, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's been me since I was like 8, you know, and all these other things flow out of that. Of course, I always loved TV and movies. Like, I loved Saturday morning cartoons. You know, I never was a comic book reader. My introduction to, and that's probably why I don't give a fuck about MCU, Jay, is because I never read the comics. Like, the reason why, like, my way in was Saturday and Sunday morning cartoons, was the Spider-Man cartoon on Fox, was right. X-Men, was Iron Man, was Incredible Hulk, was Fantastic Four, those cartoon shows that I watched, and Captain Planet and all this other shit. And so those were my fucking sort of cultural touchstones, right? Hip hop, all those things that I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I get older, and hip hop and basketball, sports in general, you know, I'm a voracious ESPN consumer. Mm-hmm. Like, I wake up, go to sleep, brushing my teeth, it's always on. Become the thing that I give a fuck about the most. And rap. And so I get older, go to college, do all of these things, get into the workforce. And I want to say all of those things remain the same. And when I didn't start caring about politics for real until Barack Obama's candidacy. And I think a lot of people my age, that's how it went.
Yeah.
I didn't become, like, this person got me interested in this thing. He just seemed a lot different than the characters that I had seen before him. Whether it be McCain, Bush, John Kerry, Al Gore, fucking Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. She was already a politician in New York by that time. George Pataki, Giuliani, Dinkins, you name it. Cuomo, you name it. People don't know this, but Andrew Cuomo and the fucking guy from Chris Cuomo, is that his name from CNN?
Yeah. Yep.
Their fucking dad, one of the greatest Democrats of my life. Right, like, this guy was a true progressive, like a real, actually a good liberal. Mario Cuomo was. People don't know that, but their dad was not a corporatist piece of shit liberal like his fucking son, the governor of New York, is. Like, wow. Their dad was the real deal. Anyway, Barry was just different from every politician that I had interfaced with in my life. So I became very interested in that. And around that time, it wasn't his first candidacy. After he won, I was watching and paying attention. I would read and pay attention when I could, but I wasn't fully in it in 08, 09, 2010. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until his reelection bid that I really got into it. Like it really ramped up for me in 2012 which also coincided with me getting my first real desk job, fucking corporate job. I was working at a bank, but not at a bank. I worked for a bank, one of the major financial institutions, in the back office. So we worked at an office, sort of a cubicle farm, if you will. And when you work at one of those, you have a lot of fucking time to be on a computer to do nothing. Like, you know what's expected of you to be done by day's end. You know how long that's going to take you. And so I'm going to do my bare minimum shit. And the rest of the day, I'm basically going to be on the computer doing the fuck I want. And so I spent a lot of time. That's when I got into basketball blogs, because that was the height of basketball bloggers. Shit like Free Darko and Hardwood Paroxysm and Clipper Blog and True Hoop and all these other shit. All of the people in NBA media who I give a fuck about, who a lot of them happen to be my friends now, but also because of what I do, but like also they're the ones who got me into this type of basketball media. Your Zach Lowe's, your Tom Haberstroh's, your Ethan Sherwood Strauss's, your Kevin Arnovitz's, your Henry Abbott's, your Nathaniel Friedman's, your Zach Harper's, your fucking Charlie Widow's, who now he's out of media. He's now an exec with on the Clippers digital side. All of these guys came out of the basketball blog world. So around that time, because I was spending so much time in an office, I was doing a lot of that. And I was interested in politics. And to make a long story short, Olivia, and I don't get tired of telling this because it's true, and I think it's important that people understand this. So this is around the time Bill Simmons comes out with Grantland. And if you remember Grantland, you know they were mostly known for their long ass articles.
Yeah.
They just didn't believe in editing. They just believed in
That's a good way to put
the
it.
Format of long form. Which I loved, because I needed something to take up the time of my day. So I would love when fucking Grantland dropped long form, because I had nothing to do at this cubicle. I had nothing but time. And so I loved when I could read something that would transport me somewhere for 40, 45 minutes. Fucking 3,000 words on whatever. Not even 10,000 words on whatever the fuck it was. And Simmons amassed, to his credit, a dope array of writers from different backgrounds, although not many of them black. But you get the point, different ages, whatever. And one of the writers, one of the people that I was a fan of very early on, was Charles Pierce. And he had, and you know, you would read at the bottom of Charles Pierce's thing, and his byline would say, "Charles Pierce is also a political writer for Esquire." And I was like, oh shit, I'm into politics already anyway. And Charles Pierce, if anybody's ever read him, he is just a beautiful writer. He is poetic. He is funny. He's a historian. He's just, I don't know. Like, if I dream of writing the way this guy does about the things that he cares about, which is sports and politics. And I was like, shit, let me check out his Esquire stuff. And that happened to be around the time of the fucking campaign, the race between Mitt Romney and Barry. And how Chuck Pierce's Esquire blog worked was he would share and link. That's how blogs were. They shared and linked to other blogs. And he would share and link to the Daily Coast, to all of these other shits. And he's how I got into lefty media.
Right.
You know, how I found the New Republic, how I found all this other shit. Talking Points Memo, shit that I would have never fucking heard of on my own, because it's not the Times or the Post.
Right.
You know, it's something different. And so through Chuck Pierce, who's slowly radicalizing me, and by the way, Chuck Pierce is just your run-of-the-mill progressive. I wouldn't even say he's a liberal. He's a progressive. He believes in the social safety net. He doesn't think it's enough. He believes we should take care of people. That's the job of the government, period.
Right.
He's a good progressive. He's not fucking, we need to get more niggas in Harvard, and that'll save everybody's life. Like some of these dummy liberals. Don't even get me started on this Kamala Harris shit.
Oh my God.
But, dude, you know, Chuck Pierce is a real progressive. And he was radicalizing me and informing my worldview. And what did Chuck Pierce do? Chuck Pierce put me on to this little show that MSNBC was doing on the weekends, both Saturday and Sundays. This show called Up with Chris Hayes, hosted by a guy named Chris Hayes, a guy who used to be a reporter before that at The Nation. And Chris Hayes, whatever, a lot of people on the left have their own thing about Chris Hayes. My thing is, Chris Hayes is the very best that elite media has to offer.
Right.
Period.
Right.
It's never going to get better in elite media than Chris Hayes. And so, and the thing about his show, Up with Chris Hayes, on weekends was that it was different from the other comparables, which is Meet the Press, Face the Nation, what Charles Pierce called the quote-unquote the Sunday shows, which is where serious politicians go to make serious arguments about why they need to cut your granny's Social Security. Right? Where Hugh Hewitt and all these cocksuckers who fucking spearheaded the Iraq war, they get to go on the Sunday shows after they were fucking miserably wrong about that. The single defining thing in American politics since, I don't even fucking know, Vietnam?
Yeah.
They were completely wrong about, but they get to go on the Sunday shows and spew all kinds of garbage. And Chuck Pierce is like, yo, you know why you need to watch Chris Hayes? Because he's getting union leaders on there, community activists on, activists on there, organizers on there. Like, he's getting normal people on MSNBC's airwaves on the weekends. So you need to watch this dude's show. So I loved Up with Chris Hayes. I guess it was a success because they bumped him up to a night show on the weekday. So I followed him there. And from there, Chris Hayes would always have different type of guests than your fucking Chris Matthews, who was on there back in those days, and right. Ed, whatever the fuck his name was, the fake, you know, hard ass from PA, and then of course Maddo at 9. But Chris Hayes would always have different type of people, and one day he has this, and a couple of days he has this guy named Sam Cedar on.
Right.
And Sam Cedar on corporate ass MSNBC looks next to those people. He looks like a fire-breathing leftist dragon.
Yeah, right.
And you guys are familiar with Sam Cedar.
Yeah, I know who he is, yes.
So, again, a good liberal, great progressive. He's nobody's idea of an anarchist, crazy, fire-breathing shit stir.
Yeah.
He's just, like, compared to corporate media types.
Yeah, he's a fucking commie. Like, he's a commie.
Right. So I'm like, shit, who's this dude? On his little thing, the little graphic, it says Sam Cedar of the Majority Report. So I look up the Majority Report and I start watching Sam Cedar on YouTube when I can, because he does a daily show when I can. And on that show, he has a couple of people on, but the main sort of sidekick is this guy named Michael Brooks.
Right.
And whatever. At first, I'm like, oh, this is Sam's little sidekick. Whatever. Who gives a shit? And then on Mondays back then was Sam's day off, I guess. And so he would give Michael the reins to the show, and it would just be Michael's show, and Michael would just change the tenor of the show. But at first, I can remember saying to myself, man, I ain't watching Sam's fucking lackey his show on Monday. He's the bootleg version. I'm not gonna watch the substitute teacher. I like, why the fuck would I do that? But then one day I gave him a chance, and I just remember thinking, this guy is fucking brilliant. This guy is articulating all the things that I feel about our society. He's doing it right here on YouTube every Monday when he gets the chance to do Sam Shit by himself. And Mike, of course, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mike's work. Well, I'm sure Jay is, but I don't know if you are, Olivia. He is a straight up staunch leftist. Like, no, I'm not liberal. No, I'm not. No, I'm a leftist. I'm a Marxist, to be exact. Right? We need to seize the means of production from these cocksuckers. We need to crush the bosses. The only way we can do it is together, if we work together. Because by ourselves, the bosses are too powerful. They'll kill us. Right. But if we get together, we'll fuck them up. They got to respect us. They got to give us our just due. They can't make us work without, make us work OT without time and a half. They can't put little kids to work in factories. They have to give us weekends off. They have to give us vacation days. They have to give us maternity leaves. They have to give us sick pay. They have to give us fucking workman's comp.
Fuck yeah.
We can only do that shit when we fucking do it together. Because by ourselves, when we negotiating against the bosses, they kill us. They get us to go against each other, form our little factions, say, well, I got a fancier title than you, so you ain't shit and I'm better than you.
Yep.
Well, the bosses like me a little bit more. They're going to kill us that way. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed. It's not even like a question. Like, it's not even like the fight is fixed in that sense.
It is.
You're guaranteed to lose. And so Mike, you know, I start and he started opening my eyes to why some of the things that Barry did was problematic.
Right.
Why we shouldn't just take the Democrats at face value that they give a fuck about us and what ails us. Why we need to question them. Mm-hmm. Also, why it's not the best idea to completely write off people just because they vote Republican. Because if there's anything that I'm learning, and I think basically Mike is somebody who helped me transform into the leftist that I am today. If there's anything that I'm learning, as I've definitely become even more radicalized throughout the pandemic, where I've become very wary of race politics, is that I used to be that person that thought that conservatives were basically retards, right? Like, it's hubris though. It's like, we're the ones with all the answers. We're the ones who actually thought about this shit. Mm-hmm. We're the smart ones. We're the learned ones. We're the ones who read books. We're the ones who come out of academic institutions. We are the smartest.
Right.
Which is just stupid, elitist, dumb, stupid shit. Mm-hmm. But I used to think that. And then the more that I fucking pay attention to what happens in the discourse and I watch liberals be fucking ridiculous, the more I realize they had a point the whole time. They did. Not that they're right, but they had a point. Because there's a difference between somebody having a point and somebody being right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can have a point and be wrong. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, and I was bitching about this on Twitter today about Kamala Harris.
Yep.
And her little minions online starting a shitstorm. Because Vogue magazine didn't make you look cool enough.
Oh my God.
And I sit there and I'm just like, and that's why I'm telling you, like, race politics I've become wary of, because here's what I'm supposed to agree with them on, J and O. Mm-hmm. That because Vogue magazine is an elite institution, they need to get it right with Kamala Harris.
Right.
It's important that Kamala Harris be viewed through the right prism on the cover of Vogue magazine, simply because they're an elite institution. Never mind, Vogue magazine is one of the most racist publications ever.
Thank you.
Exactly.
How can they be the ones defining the historical significance of a Kamala Harris vice presidency? How?
Yeah, I don't care. Fuck
them. Liberals, make it make sense to me.
Yeah.
This is where they have a fucking point. I'm sorry. Sometimes our heads are too far our own fucking asses, bro. Yeah. How do you sound? You like, and here's because I feel like I've been droning on. And here's where it all, where my worldview was informed by. You know for a fact that what Yasir Ali, whatever the fucking dude was who said, oh, the camp had agreed on one picture and they used a different picture.
Oh my God.
And it's whack because she's the right person and blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. Here's why I'm pissed about it and why I'm gonna shut the fuck up after, because it's gonna answer your question, Olivia.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The next time the Dems somehow squander an opportunity to help people like me and you, mm-hmm. Kamala Harris's people are not gonna back channel and leak who did it, why they did it, why it's fucked up. They're not going to do that.
Nope.
Yep.
They're not gonna back channel, use unofficial sources to expose people not doing shit for people in their fucking job. It's not Vogue's job to make fucking Kamala Harris look cool.
Exactly.
In their job, in the government's job, in their capacity as public servants, civil servants, when they're not doing their job for working people, normal people, Kamala Harris is not going to use her back channel media sources to shit on the people who fucked working people over. But yep. They'll do it in service of not making her look cool in front of Vogue.
it's ass backwards.
That's what informs my worldview. Oh, if any of that fucking rambling mess made any sense to you.
Oh my God. Yep.
Oh my God. Oh yeah, you hit the nail on the head, man. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I saw that today and I just ignored the hell out of it because like look at where we are today. Like, why is this the issue?
Why do we have politicians that even want to be on the cover of fucking Vogue? Like, you know,
I understand why you want to be on the cover of Vogue. Mm-hmm. Because you are playing a PR game. You are.
Yeah.
As elected official, as somebody who's courting votes, you are playing a PR game. I understand that. That's not to say that I don't understand that. But my problem, especially, and I could say this as a black person, is it's the same reason why I get annoyed by motherfuckers bitching about the Grammys.
Right.
Why are you making the Grammys define you?
Yeah.
What, the bottom line is, Vogue magazine cannot lend its prestige to the office that Kamala Harris has ascended to. It's the other way around.
Right.
Exactly. I'm validating your magazine by being on the cover.
Exactly.
What are you talking about? That's why when niggas be like, yo, well, they're only doing it to her because she's black. Well, they're fucking Vogue. They don't think black people are cool.
Yeah.
They don't think black people are beautiful, are worthy of their covers. This motherfucker, the dude who shot the fucking picture, because I had to do my Googles on this whole controversy. Mm-hmm. He's the first in 2018. Y'all can Google when Vogue first started. Yep. He's the first black cover photographer in the history of that publication. Wow. 2018. He did Beyonce in 2018 for them. He did Kamala this year for them. In 2018, he was the first black photographer to do a Vogue cover.
That's crazy.
So this is the publication from whom you seek validation. What the fuck? Like, I'm sorry, Kamala, you could have did Essence Mag and you could have made it a big deal. You could have did open shit and you could have made it important. You could have said, I'm the first black and Indian fucking woman in this office. Essence Mag gave me the cover to commemorate it. This shit means everything to me. Instead, what you do, Vogue didn't make me look cool enough.
Yeah.
Fucking insanity, bro. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, Vogue don't make you. And I had a couple of homies in the media space like, well, I don't see how it's so bad. I don't see what is hurt or lost by trying to hold the prestige publications accountable. I'm like, See why it looks ridiculous to be doing this on behalf of this?
Yeah.
And it's the bottom line this, is,
at any time, but especially at this time.
Bro, nobody raised it. Yo, son, Kamala Harris specifically. After they won that election, mind you, months ago, early in the year, she fucking co-sponsored a bill for $2,000 checks. They won that election. She didn't say a word about it. Nobody online was up in arms. This is people's lives we talking about. The K-Hive did not assemble for this. Trust me, I follow enough people on Instagram who yas queened her nomination and yas queened the victory and yas queen. When she didn't say shit about the $2,000 checks, nobody gave a fuck. Nobody made this much of a stink as they did about the Vogue shit. Her own fucking bill. Nobody moved. Bernie had to move. Trump had to move. Nobody moved. And then they finally had some goddamn sense to put the $2,000 checks on the ballot in Georgia.
Yeah.
And what do you know? Whoop-de-fucking-do, they won. Instead of saying, I'm not Trump. And so that's my problem. And I want anybody who's listening to this to understand, like, you know, like, liberals are annoying, but they're who we got.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not gonna abandon liberals, but I'm not gonna not be annoyed by this shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, this shit bothers me.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something, because I noticed that you don't get you in particular, because I follow you on Twitter, obviously. You don't get lost in the discourse between, you know, run-of-the-mill leftist discourse, you know.
You mean like the squad you call it to a vote type shit? Or the squad should have fucked Pelosi out of the speakership or whatever, that type of shit?
Yeah.
I don't see the utility of it. And also, I think what lefties got to understand. Here's what I think people really need to understand in the lesson that needs to be learned from Bernie's candidacy. Both of them. One, our message resonates.
Right.
With people, a mass amount of people. That a dude that nobody ever fucking heard of could put the fear of God into Hillary Clinton, and then Barry had to circle the wagons for Joe Biden to save his weak ass campaign. That he could do that on ideas.
Right.
On helping people, period. Mm-hmm. Not, oh, I'm not racist. Whatever the fuck that even means these days. That he could do that, that's powerful. We need to learn that lesson. That's powerful. Two, and I don't think enough lefties understand this, and I want us to understand this. The same reason why Bernie could run the campaign that he did and gain the support and devotion that he did from people like us is the same reason he lost. Bernie had no friends. That's why we loved him, but that's also why he lost. He never played the game. The thing that made him appealing to us is also why he lost. He never played the game with these people. He never even called himself a Democrat. He never played the fucking game. And what you seeing in this newer generation, particularly AOC, who somebody told her she could become president one day. And that's informing everything that she does. She's trying to play the game while also championing these issues. That's what motherfuckers don't understand. When, like, and also, it's like, okay, so what? Y'all want Hakeem Jeffries in there? Y'all want to empower him?
Yeah.
That's who y'all want to empower?
Thank you.
That's the choice. Yeah, he's black. That's what the, and that's what the libs are gonna hit you over the smack you over the head with. Yeah,
exactly. Young,
intelligent black guy.
Didn't I say this? Didn't I say this?
Yeah.
Thank you, Waz.
Got all the right degrees. Got all the, and he's another fucking corporate Dem. Look it up.
Yep.
So
he's further to the right than Nancy is.
Come on now, Jay. We're not gonna fall for the banana in the tailpipe again. We're not doing it. We're not gonna do it. And I just wish lefties could be more strategic and understand she's playing the game. Understand that the thing that we love most about Bernie was what? My fucking campaign is funded by people. $25. That's who funded my shit. I don't have a crazy pack behind me. Mm-hmm. I don't have the fucking $3,000 donor class behind me. I don't have Harvard behind me. I don't have that. I got the people behind me. I don't have the traditional means by which the Democratic Party gets funding for campaigns. I don't got that group of people who shoves that money behind me. I got people behind me. But also what that means, I don't have to rub elbows with y'all. I don't have to play your games. I don't have to kowtow, oh, Joe's my man. He once looked out for this. He's very connected to the financial services industry. So in my campaign, I can't go out and be against it because Joe's my man. And this, like, I don't have to play those games. But at the same time, when it was time to rally the troops, the troops could all rally against Bernie because he wasn't one of them.
Right.
That's what motherfuckers don't want to accept. That's what they don't want to accept about the club. Like, a lot of this shit doesn't boil down to your Medicare for all shit. A lot of this shit, this shit's a club.
Yeah.
This shit's about power. This shit's about who scratched my back. And now I'm going to scratch theirs. That's what they don't want to understand about politics. Like, sorry guys, I know you wish it away, but it is still politics. Right. So you can call the Skull the Squad missing all their bitches, their pussies. They missed an opportunity to do what? To get Pelosi out of there. Yes, I agree she should be out of there.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be for Hakeem Jeffries, bro.
Nah.
Me
neither.
So we could just have him for the next fucking 20 years?
Oof, man.
He's in his 40s.
Yeah.
But I don't see the utility in that fight.
Nah. And you know, I'm sad to say that
I think the utility is in the $2,000 check shit that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
That was legitimately powerful.
Yeah. I mean, he got more people on our side. You know, not just people who call themselves leftists.
And I know the libs are not going to want to hear this, but like, if you really think you have more common cause with Oprah Winfrey than the toothless hicks in the trailer park in West Virginia, you don't get it. I'm sorry. If you really think Oprah's billionaire ass has more common cause with you, I have a bridge in Brooklyn for sale for you. The libs are never going to want to hear this because they're repulsed by, yes, hicks are disgusting. I get it. Yes, I get it. But they're human beings, one. And two, their interests are more aligned with yours than Barack Obama's, than Michael Jordan, than Puff Daddy, than Jay-Z, than LeBron James, than all of these rich black people. Then Joyanne Reed. Like, just because these people, in the case of especially a Joyanne Reed type, she went to, you know, she got her degrees and she's fancy and she talks the right way and whatever, and she'll call out racism.
Good for her.
Great. She don't give a fuck about the common man, bro. No. A lot of that shit is so navel-gazy. A lot of the rhetoric that comes out, it's like, I want my cushy job to be cushier.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to. And you know, man, and the thing is, the few black people who do ascend to elite strata, their influence becomes outsized, in the sense that they think because they would like to see more niggas at Harvard, that they themselves would feel better when they saw it, that would translate as to making the lives of black people at large better. That's how we get there. That's how we get the neoliberalism. Well, if we just fill Biden's cabinet with more niggas, if the dude pushing the button on the drones on the kids in Yemen's heads is black, everything will just be great for niggas at home. That's literally what these people think.
Damn.
And you see it. You see it, man. You see it. I got. Like in the NBA, they're calling these motherfuckers activists, and nobody loves the players more than me. Nobody believes in what the players are capable of more than me. They're not activists. No. The dude's trying to figure it out. They're black, they're celebrities. They've been fortunate enough to amass a substantial amount of money, so people expect them to save the entirety of black people in this country.
Right.
And they're trying their best. They're trying their best to do a job that they never asked for, but was thrusted upon them.
I did want to ask you about that for a second, if I can interject. I mean, the reason why we have guests on the show is so I don't have to do all the work.
Love it. I'm the same. You know, I'm sitting here like, damn, I'm fucking talking a lot. But I'm literally the same way on my show. I just want it's just like I don't even gotta do shit. I just show up.
I was listening to Bomani show. His ESPN show.
Love Bo.
Yeah.
He's a comrade.
Yeah. And comrade. He mentioned about the thing at the Capitol, and he was talking about what's the cat's name? The dude from Minnesota. I'm blanking.
George Floyd?
Nah. The dude who played for the Timberwolves. What's cat's name? I can't forget his name. I can't remember
Paul
his
Anthony
name.
Paul Anthony Town?
Nah, not him. The other boy. D'Angelo Russell.
Okay, why are you asking D'Angelo Russell?
Why are you asking the black athletes about the Capitol? Why aren't you asking the white athletes? You know what I mean? Because like we weren't like it was a couple of dudes, black dudes there, but I mean, as Bo put it, it was the black dudes who always got fucked up haircuts. So like, why are you asking black athletes this instead of the white ones?
You're not gonna ask Brett Favre why, you know, people fuck their cousins in Mississippi. Just would never ask him that. It's rude. That's in poor taste. And they don't want to talk about that.
Right.
They don't want to talk about problematic white people. They don't want to talk about that. And honestly, we'd have to get at the root of the problem, man. Like, the reason why a lot of these people... And again, liberals will never, they for whatever reason, they hate to admit this, but like the reason why a lot of these people blame niggers and spics for all of their problems is because they got a lot of problems. Like, they have bad problems. Like living in Mississippi stinks. It sucks. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's the poorest state in the union. It's the most red state in the union. Mitch McConnell's Republican Party.
Exactly.
There is no more corporatist person than Mitch McConnell. The oligarchs, when they're gonna build a shrine to fucking Mitch McConnell. He's done so much for them.
Yeah.
Bro, they're going to pour one out for this man when he leaves this earth. He's done so much for corporate power. Mm-hmm. And in Mississippi, the poorest state in the union, man, that's the most reliably Republican shit. And people don't want to hit, like, yes, they're not giving them anything else, but you're white and you're great.
Yep.
And guess what? The Dems ain't never deliver a single fucking thing for these people. Mm-hmm. Except Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, which happened almost 100 fucking years ago now.
Yeah, right?
And guess what? They love those things. Even fucking Republicans know. You can't take away social. We'll get killed. We'll get creamed for that. Mm-hmm. It's literally socialism. Social is literally in the fucking name.
Yeah.
And they know they can't take that shit away. And the Dems, you know, years ago, they decided that union guys, ethnic whites, as they used to be called, that's what they used to call Italian cats and Polish cats and Irish cats, ethnic whites or whatever. They were too icky and gruff. And not cosmopolitan enough, and that they needed to move the operation to the suburbs and court suburban whites instead of, you know, labor power. Yeah. And this is what we got. You know, you're not gonna work in a factory no more. You're gonna have a job at Google, dummy.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's shit.
No, you're not.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And as far as the sports shit, though, Jay, like. Mm. I've kind of evolved in the sense that, like, it's not that I don't care what these, because I used to be like, we should not care what these cats have to say. They don't know.
Yeah.
If, for instance, like, you know how Leonardo DiCaprio is like obsessed with the environment?
Yeah.
Like, that's his only shit that he'll fundraise for, like saving the planet, so to speak, or whatever.
Yeah.
Carbon emissions, yada, yada, yada. That's his one thing. Don't ask him about economic policy.
Yeah.
Don't ask him about healthcare policy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask him that. Don't ask him about what the military budget should be. He's done the work on fucking the planet. On fucking environmental shit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's talk to him about it, because he clearly cares about this shit. But stick a mic in front of a fucking basketball player's face because he's fucking black and ask him, how do we fix cops in this country? What? What?
Oh my God.
You really gotta ask yourself, like, and not that these cats aren't capable, we shouldn't challenge them to be great. Of course we should, man. Of course, you know, LeBron James and I've got my own ideas about what these cats need to be doing.
Right.
I might, if I'm able to muster up the fucking will, I might write some shit for Martin Luther King, centered around his growing socialism, specifically publicly, closer towards the end of his life, and that becoming part of a core part of the initiative.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he got snuffed.
That, got clapped. Because he started talking about the money.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, what it would mean for NBA guys to take on that fight. Mm. You know, to fight on behalf of poor people and what they fucking need. And it's not Chuck Schumer and Kente Cloth. That's just not that is not what I promise you, no nigga in the hood's life was made better.
No.
Why? Nancy Pelosi.
We was clowning them for that.
Come on, son. Can't be serious, son. Every time I see that picture, it's like this first time I saw it.
I can't. Yo, I see that shit.
It's and I'm so ridiculous.
Bust out laughing. Yo, that shit is hilarious. Like, they should have just bust out in the Wakanda salute after that. Like,
bruh,
really want to do it.
Might as well. You might as well.
Oh, my God. Shoot. Start doing the electric slide or something.
Bruh. Just pull out hot sauce from your purse next.
Tell us how you really feel, Nancy.
Like...
And by the way, I appreciate a good pander.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's hilarious.
You know, like when Barack went to that church and he sang Amazing Grace, he was pandering.
Yeah.
But it landed. It was effective. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know this song, nigga. Don't worry, I'm Harvard, but I ain't that fucking lost. Nigga, I know Amazing Grace now.
That shit was bad though. The Kente Claw shit.
Oh my God.
You gotta try a little harder.
Oh my God.
That was ridiculous.
Oh my God. I mean, it made me laugh. I laugh every time I see
it. Ridiculous. I literally couldn't believe what I was seeing. And again, it's like just, you know, just give them some black shit. They'll love it. They'll eat it up. Make the White House rainbow colors. They'll eat that shit up. They love it.
Mm.
Don't give them jobs though.
Nah.
No, don't make them feed their family now. They're going to get too happy now. We don't want that.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. I'm interested to know how you guys met each other and decided that, you know what, we're going to do this show together.
Yeah. Me and Liv are like we met online.
Nice.
Through mutual friends. I'm from Philly. You know I'm from Philly. Liv is from shout out to Jer. Liv is from rural Pennsylvania. So, like, we don't live anywhere near each other. But, like, I met Liv through, like, a family member. And, we had this Facebook group about the Bernie Sanders campaign. And, we were organizing around that. And then once he dropped out, we were going to do a podcast, and then it wasn't even just going to be me, as I said before. It was going to be a lot of people. Yeah. But, you know, after Bernie Sanders suspended his campaign, a lot of people, you know, they were just like, well, I don't even want to do this anymore. Like, everybody, you know, just retreated into their, you know, their little space or whatever. And I don't blame them. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, we had so much momentum going that it was kind of like devastating.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I still remember that bum feeling out of South Carolina. That was miserable.
Yeah. And you know, and then once the uprising started, I felt like we had to, you know, get our voices out there. And I was like, hey, like, guys, do you still want to do this podcast? And everybody said no. And then, you know, one day I woke up and I was just like, hey, should we like if nobody wants to do this, like if nobody wants to do a commentary show, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just had the idea, well, why don't we let people do the work for us? You know what I mean? Why don't we just go out and get, you know, normal leftist liberal voices and see what they think, you know what I mean? And
Jay had had this beautiful vision that you like presented to like the group, and you were like, let's talk to like regular folks, let's amplify their voices, let's talk to them about what's going on, like that, let's create like more communication. And like when I heard that, like I heard Jay's call, like how could you not get behind that? So like Jay, I think Jay had a beautiful vision for the podcast, and Jay, I've been fortunate enough to be able to like co-host with Jay on this, and we've talked to so many people, and it's just been an absolute honor to like to be your co-host, Jay, and to like talk to all the people that we've been able to talk to.
Man, I think, you know, I think it's important that I think what you guys are doing is important, because going out into the world, especially as a leftist, like, you know, for a while when my girl first met me, she would introduce me at parties like, yeah, my boyfriend's a communist. And I'd be like, and like, she just thought that was just like, this is like, can you believe that? Is what she would say to people. And I'd be like, well, actually, I'm socialist, but, you know, yeah, there's a difference and I don't care to get into it. But yeah, I am for sure. I'm definitely, I'm anti-capitalist as it gets. Like, yeah, I fucking hate the bosses. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I think it's important because of that fact that we do remain in community with each other. Because it's easy to feel like, especially what we're doing, man, it's easy to feel like you're speaking into the void, man. Like,
right.
So I think it is important to remain in community with folks, talk to each other, exchange ideas, and have disagreements. Like, who gives a shit? Like,
we've
whatever.
We've had a few shows where we had to push back on people. Like, yeah, we've had the quote-unquote, what I call brocialists. Who would like, you know what I mean, gang ho, let's storm the government and shit. And I'm like, oh, hold up now. Like, you're getting in too deep. Like, a lot, you want people to die for you who are not ready to die for you.
Yeah.
Like, I've had to have that conversation with a lot of people. And, you know, but yeah. You know, I feel like this show in particular, like, I had an idea that, like, what if we just, you know, talk to as many people as we can. And, you know, not a lot of people get to have their voice on wax. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people think they just, you know, when they say stuff, nobody listens to them. So I wanted to give people a platform to, you know, vent and have their voice be heard by more than just, you know, the brick wall they're talking to, you know?
I think it's been super cathartic too. A lot of people like have like come back and be like, that was really cathartic, and I think that like it like connects and unifies people and is bringing folks together, and I think it empowers people, like with Jay's vision for like talking to all these people. They're like, what, you want to talk to me? Like,
yeah, I like I said, I can't even count how many times I've had people, when I've reached out to them, they go, well, I don't think I'm smart enough or whatnot, or like, I'm not really that interesting. And then we do the show and it's like 2 hours long.
Yeah, nah, for sure. And you know, it's important. It's important, man. And what I would say to people, and I don't even know if Mike invented this phrase or term or saying, but he would always say it. He would say, you know, be kind to people, be ruthless with systems, right?
Yeah.
So,
perfect. Yeah.
So, like, look, man, I don't have to get nasty with people personally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and again, you know, like, I'm getting into a fight with libs on Twitter where it's just like, yo, this is liberal bourgeois vanity in its worst fucking form. It's ugly, man. This is lame. This is trash.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not to say that I've never been vain. That I've never been had elitist tendencies. But I know it when I see it.
Yeah. He skips the ego. Nobody skips the
persona. Yeah. I mean, so, we all got our ego to get over, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wiles, I wanna thank you once again for being on the show. I mean, it's been a like, we've been recording for an hour, and like, I just want to thank you. I know you don't have, you know, like, you're a busy guy. You didn't really have to do this, but you know, I took a shot, and you know, I'm just glad you agreed to do this. Like, I'm very honored,
man. You know, the pleasure was all mine. Obviously, like I said, you've been supporting what we do for years now, which means a lot to me. And you've always had a kind word to say about my work, which, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. When you're trying something new for the first time, and you know, like, my background is not in journalism or broadcast media or any of that shit. Like, I'm a novice at this. And So when people are like, nah, man, you're doing your thing. You're getting better and better all the time. I can see you growing into your whatever. It means a lot. It helps a lot. So obviously I'm appreciative of that. And, you know, I'm honored that you reached out to me and thought enough that I would be able to, you know, have something meaningful to say to the people that listen to this. So thanks for that.
Nah, man. Like I said, man, I've been a fan of yours for the longest time, man. Keep doing your thing, man.
Yeah.
If you want to listen to Waz, like, this cat, man, I'm telling you, this cat knows, he got shit to say. Like, I'm just keeping it real. Not just on politics, sports, culture, anything you need, you can get it for my man, the black intellectual.
Thank you, man. Thank you. And yeah, you did invent that nickname that I was running with for a minute. The black intellectual.
I remember that day like it was yesterday, man. Every time I listen to the Friday mailbag and Anthony Mays says that,
Yes, sir.
I do a little fist pump every time
yes,
I hear
it. Yes, sir. That. You invented it. That's a fact. It's a big fact.
All right, man. I'm gonna let you get out of here, man.
All right, man. Thank you. Olivia, it was a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I obviously hit me when it's done. I'm gonna share the shit and all of that. So
yeah,
I'll talk to you guys soon, all right?
Appreciate it. All right, for Olivia Seaman, for Wozni Lambre, I'm your host, Jay Hezekiah. We'll see you later. Solidarity forever.